Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Back. It's episode 59 of Eurobash, and we're in Dublin city centre today because I'm busy later on. I can't get access to a car, all this kind of wonderful stuff. So we met up on the beautiful south side.
Well, we are on the south side, but we are back in the city centre, obviously.
Well, I mean, your commute was, what, 20 minutes? I've been on the road since about 8 a.m.
Yeah, but you live in the States, though. You don't really live in Dublin.
You know what I mean? Listen, bad form. You're from Kildare, mate.
It's a lovely day here, isn't it?
It's poxy. It's really bad.
It's really bad. There's severe weather warnings for this evening in Dublin for rain. So, what a weekend, Petey. Let's get to it, man.
Yeah, loads huge of sports. Huge weekend. Well, I didn't really watch anything else apart from UFC. Huge card, massive event. Massive event in Madison Square Garden, of course. Jorge Masvidal running away with that fight against Nate Diaz, even. Unfortunately, the fight being called off in the third round. We'll talk all about that later. Disappointing conclusion to the BMF situation there. You know, before we get to the news, how did you enjoy the event?
I loved them. Yeah. One of the best cards I've watched in a long, long time. I think we spoke about some of the fights last week. They definitely delivered the ones we'd mentioned. A real nice, I think, of positives for the world of mixed martial arts. And we needed it, even with, you know, Donald Trump being there.
Yeah, that's huge. Like, and whether you like him or you don't like him, the fact that amazing. He was at a UFC event is unbelievable.
The traction was insane.
It was funny, right? Because Dana White in the post-fight press conference is going, Barack Obama went to NBA games, George Bush went to baseball games, but Trump goes to MMA. And I was like, what does that say about MMA?
it does, but it's, listen, just have those eyes on the sport for that night. And yeah, no, I agree with him in terms of that, you know. Why not go to mixed martial arts events? Why not go to the UFC? The UFC is a big brand, nearly as... it's not far off from where it's come from. Massive night for the sport. And, you know, we even saw the Zone moving the start time of their fight to later on. And that just proves something, that the UFC and UFC 224 was the hottest ticket in town in the United States last Saturday night.
I usually stay up to watch the boxing as well, but I was so emotionally exhausted by the end of it. It's like, I turned it on, it's Canelo walking out, and I was like, do you know what?
I watched sport all day. The only time I sort of left the vicinity of the television on Saturday was to have a shower. And that was after the England rugby game.
Fair play for having a shower. And sometimes you don't even get that far, you know what I mean?
Just, will you stop now? I hate smelly people. I watched sport all day. It was great. Had a, you know, just a wonderful night. I was really, really happy the way, like Kevin Lee as well, for example. What a changed mentality. And we spoke about that. And to see a guy sort of mature in front of our eyes, a special night for mixed martial arts, I think.
Yeah. Well, look, let's have a look at the latest news here for a second.
This is number one bullshit.
Darren Till successful in his middleweight debut in the co-main event of UFC 244. UFC working on Habib versus Tony for March, according to Dana White in the event's post-fight press conference. Conor McGregor charged with assault, fined €1,000 last weekend. I believe it was Friday, November 1st. Wald Harris is out of his main event clash with Alistair Overeem at UFC Washington due to the disappearance of his stepdaughter. A lot of people chipping in with reward money and stuff there now. It's a terrible, terrible situation. I hope that gets sorted.
Yeah, definitely hear her.
Cyril Gane will be back in action against Tanner Bossar in Busan, which he told us he would be interested in when he appeared on the Eurobash last week. Kadis Ibragimov replaces Antikyulov against Ed Yerman in Moscow this weekend. Charlie Ward v. Pietro Panini moved to Bellator London. Ross Houston, this is a weird one. Ross Houston had a Polaris bout, but
he wasn't too
he
happy.
Was forced out of it. Throwing some shade at CW there. Yeah. Interesting though, like, kind of understand it. Like,
I've said it,
a champion not being allowed to compete in a.
Well, Paddy Pimblett got injured.
Well, he's fighting next week.
I know, but he got injured. No, a few months ago during the summer.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it was the famous one is Brett Johns.
It's Brett Johns.
He got
well.
Tom Halpin ripped his knee off.
I've spoke about it. I'm not for it. I think, you know, the promotion.
I don't think you can argue with that.
Yeah, I don't think you can argue with it either. I think it's something that needs to happen in mixed martial arts, where these guys who are actively fighting on the roster shouldn't be allowed to compete in these events. I think it's crazy, to be honest.
Yeah, Miles Price, just final bit of news. Miles Price is out of his bout with Alfie Davis. He revealed that over the weekend as well, so that's a bit of a blow for Irish fans going to tune into that Bellator card. Just to run through a few of these, maybe we'll leave the Till stuff and the 244 stuff to later on. But what do you think of the news of Cyril Gane turnaround? Like, I mean, I felt like when he was on the show last week, it was pretty obvious that he was going to, because he kept talking about South Korea.
I think if you look at his fight and the victory he had, he didn't take an awful lot of damage in that fight. So I'm not too surprised with the turnaround. I think he's a guy who wants to be very active in the division. Climb the roster, climb the scales, and you know, I've no problem. He's young in his UFC career and his mixed martial arts pro career anyway as well, so the more fights he can get in, the better. If he's no damage, why not go ahead, do it.
Like, this is the thing, right? After that was announced, it came out that Walt was out of that fight with Overeem, which I was glad to see, to be honest, because of the situation.
Oh yeah, 100%, 100%.
And I was like, why don't you just put Gane in with Overeem? And then the people were going crazy. But I was like, the reason why I'm saying this is because they're making Volkov v. Hardy. I'm like, clearly we don't give a shit anymore.
Yeah.
And I mean, at least Overeem is in the same skill set wheelhouse as
Gane.
As Gane is a striker, Overeem's a striker. Like, I mean, he's an elite striker as well. So, I mean, I don't feel like it's going to be a devastating disparity in skill sets, you know?
But maybe they just want to keep Cyril for a little bit longer. Maybe, you know,
I feel like they want him to headline that event, right? What he said to us, he wants him. Well, like, the first French event.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. That's what I think they're probably aiming to do there, because, you know, as you said, there's been so much hype around this guy. And maybe there's just a slower push there. Maybe they're not as excited as Greg Hardy. Maybe Dana's trying to throw him to the wolves after those two mistakes. And listen, at least they've removed it from main event in Moscow this weekend. But in terms of Gane, I have no problem with him fighting in Korea.
Interesting this with Ross Houston, right? Like, I get it, right? He's proven that he's worthy of the UFC pretty much, and he's in that situation where he's waiting for it. But I've seen this too many times where guys are just that one fight away and they start getting thick with
promoters.
Yeah. And look, I understand you get a lot more money off Cage if Bellator if you go there and stuff, but do you want to be in the UFC? That's the question.
That is, and that was a big debate this week.
Like, I mean, before he fought Dalby, he gave me, like, all this about how he wouldn't want to go to Bellator. Not that he suggests that he wanted to go over Bellator, but he does seem annoyed, right? He does seem disgruntled by his situation.
Yeah, he does. But, like, at the end of the day, if he's talking about Paul Harris and getting in there and wanted to do that, you know, keep your eyes in the game in hand, and that's going out there in that division and beating guys. And listen, he's not too far away if Nicholas Dalby's getting
signed.
He's
right there. Like,
he's right there, so I don't understand the disgruntledness. Stick it out for another little while, and you'll ultimately get to the big show if you're with Cage, or as you've seen it happen time and time again. You know, Joy Herbert, for example, as you know, Graham said to us last week that he's pretty much in talks with the UFC over signing him. So, like, Houston is right there.
Yeah.
So calm down, bud. And
I understand it's frustrating. Like, it's just from what he said, I just pulled it up here. He said
his Facebook. Yeah.
Not fucking happy at all. Feel pretty trapped, to be fair. I've gave my health and heart for them over my seven fights company. And look, I can understand why he feels like that, but welterweight's on fire right now. You're the champion of that division.
And I think it is, as well, obviously the lure of Bellator, the money. And, you know, we know guys, I don't know, I'm obviously naming them, but have turned down contracts from Bellator.
Oh, yeah.
Because they want that dream of fighting in the UFC. And if you're going to come out, and I saw a lot of stuff last week, if you're going to come out and talk rubbish,
we'll talk about that later on, because we're doing the preview.
But that is it. Listen, it's a slower burner if you're going into Cage Warriors, if you want to go to the UFC. It's obviously
we'll get into this later on.
I think, but that's the point I'm trying to make. What I'm saying here is that, you know, if you want to stick it out, it's a slower burner. I know the frustrations are there, but you've chosen that path, so stick to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a few talking points, we'll move on from the news. A cautionary end to the BMF title fight. I mean, look, I feel like if it's anywhere else in the world, that fight's continued. New York are known to be extra cautious. It's in this kind of sport, it's hard to be angry about that, I guess. But I do feel like if you are going to be officiating a Diaz contest and you haven't seen his propensity to get cut in that exact spot every single fight, I mean, do a bit of due diligence. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, come in and know where the guy has scar tissue.
But the one thing I will say, and I did even retract this on social media, you know, I thought it looked worse afterwards. Obviously, when we saw a close-up of his face.
It was hanging off Gordon Dana White.
It didn't look great, man. If you looked at the images, the Getty images put out, and it was pretty nasty looking. So the more I see it, after the broadcast, I was, you know, raging. Why is this being stopped? Why is this being stopped? And then I looked at it, you know, 10 minutes after when there was a close-up and Getty put a few images out. It looked pretty bad.
Esther put up a picture of his cut against Pettis.
Yeah.
And his cut, it's exactly the same.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, listen, yeah, I know where you're getting from, and I know York are a disaster, and actually Michael Chandler put out a post as well.
I saw Ariel talking to Chael, and I think it was another professional fighter, I'm not too sure who it was, and they were saying, like, every single one of them was like, if this was anywhere else.
Yeah, no, I agree, but it sort of, maybe it looks a little bit worse after than it did at the time. And it probably was a little bit worse than it did look on the broadcast. But, yeah, I understand Nate Diaz's frustrations. I understand the fans' frustrations. But at the end of the day, what the fuck can we do? That's really the bottom line.
Did it live up to the hype? I mean, it felt like... I can remember when I was looking at The Rock coming out, that's when I tweeted Joe Brawley's getting his shit together for this next feature, you know?
Don't fucking talk to me about The Rock. Like,
I thought it was a bit weird.
It was cringe. It really was. Yeah. I was like, oh man, I'm watching fucking...
And all week, when he announced the Mark Kerr thing, and I saw Sean Sheehan, can we stop talking about casuals? No, you're a fucking casual if you don't know who Mark Kerr is. I don't
100%.
Care.
What a film.
I don't care, right? How you feel emotionally when you're a casual.
You know what
just
I did?
Just deal with it.
I watched it again last night. What's Smashing Machine is unbelievable.
Do you have any opiates?
You'll get it on YouTube. And the poor guy at the moment isn't in...
Look, this show, we don't want any casuals listening to this show.
The poor guy is not in good health at the moment. So I'm glad to see... There's a film coming out for him, and hopefully he's going to get some well-earned bloody money from that, because he's in a bad state at the moment, Mark, in terms of his health, definitely.
Diaz wants the rematch. Jorge seems like he wants the rematch, but doesn't know when he's going to do it. But I'm telling you, if this happened and it was the other way around and Masvidal got stopped by Kutz, Dana White would be like, we're making that fight again.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's a Diaz thing. It's just...
I've no interest in seeing it. I think we saw enough there to... suggest that the power was the major difference in the fight from Jorge Masvidal. He was sparking Nate around. I think, you know, it probably would have been stopped in the fourth and fifth. Masvidal.
I hate that. I hate when people say...
No, I can't say with a Diaz.
Clearly going to go on and do this in the fourth and fifth.
No. Yeah, fair enough.
They've taken us.
Especially with Diaz, they've taken us
the closure away.
They have.
And Diaz was having more success.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying for a second he was going to go in and take over the fight in the fourth and fifth. But that was at the rounds you expect him to do something against a guy with that kind of stopping power.
Of course, I think Masvidal looked very fresh.
He looked great.
Like fitness levels were
amazing.
Insane. But listen, you know, people talk about McGregor as well and Masvidal. I don't.
But
listen,
look, that fight's gonna sell that. Like, no matter what, we often say, guys, even though he's been completely negative, completely rubbish the idea of the matchup, when he was talking about Conor, I was like, ooh.
Yeah, well, Conor a bit back on social as well. But like, at the end of the day, if you think McGregor's going to go in there, and you know, I don't think Conor have much of a chance against Masvidal. I think Masvidal's power... extremely
evident. Conor was trying to get a fight with Frankie Edgar for his comeback fight. He does not want that fight.
Yeah.
Not for a comeback fight. Yeah.
And it's odd as well. Maybe something's changed in the terms of the way Dana and him are negotiating at the moment, because
it's weird,
you know,
right?
Everyone was really, and from the information I've had from the horse's mouth in terms of Team Pettis, that fight was pulled for them from Donald Cowboy Cerrone because he was unavailable. So now that seems to have taken a turn. Where we're talking about Conor's on social media again, talking about other fights. He was very quiet for a week when the Cowboy stuff started circulating around, and now it seems as if Dana doesn't know where they're at in terms of booking a return fight from Conor McGregor.
And with this court situation where he got charged, like, I mean, I feel like any other time when Conor said he was coming back, Dana was like nearly jumping down people's throat. We can't wait to tell you that he's back.
Well, maybe that's part of it. Maybe Dana wants to get that cleared up. And yeah, I know. Obviously,
there's
something brewing
that
we don't know about.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's what I was thinking, because you know, sort of leading into fight week, maybe last week, we were under the illusion that something was going to be announced on Friday night or Saturday night during the broadcast. Nothing was said. It was, you know, oh, we're not really here. You know, we're a long, long way from booking this fight. I found that exceptionally strange, because the numbers for this fighter, you know, are going to be big from last Saturday. Look at the online traction. It would have been a perfect time to announce a return for Conor McGregor.
I actually thought they would as well. But then kind of when I saw him at the press conference kind of completely poo-pooing, yeah. I was like, oh, that's not going to happen. Yeah. Just a final word, Darren Till at 185.
Brilliant.
Exceptional performance. I know people, wasn't entertaining. Yeah, it's sport. You know, people forget that. And I know it was probably easy to forget that on the night that we had the other night. But the fact that this lad's gone in there after two stoppage defeats at welterweight and goes in there with one of the best middleweights in the world. And looks really, really comfortable in there.
Brilliant.
And really didn't seem in trouble for a
second. Listen, Peter, sometimes you have to go out there and get a win. And to do it against a guy on his middleweight debut, against Calvin Gastelum, to go out there, you know, he did actually look nervous. I was going, shit, when I saw him walk in the cage. I've never seen Darren look that scared. He admitted that after in that great interview with Adam Catterall. We saw the emotions. But for him to go out and implement a game plan and to stick to it, to not panic, to not get rushed, the leg kicks were sensational. I was just so impressed with the maturity of Darren Till, especially after those two losses, and especially against a guy like Kelvin Gastelum. Man, give that guy credit where it's due.
This is
sublime stuff.
Sometimes you need to see that part of him. You know, like when he kind of bore it all with Adam there for the BT Sport interview afterwards. That's what's convinced me that he's back. Here we go again. And what a brilliant thing to say. And I saw Ashton Daly tweeting about, like, sometimes you do feel it. Sometimes he said, obviously, to Adam that he wanted to fake an injury. He was contemplating in his head.
Crazy.
I can fake an injury and get out of this. Amazing honesty. And I love the fight game when shit like that happens. But, do you know what I mean? Like, this is why we're in this.
And you know, Chris was talking about Chris Fields on Twitter. And it's something I always sticks out in my mind with Chris, because Chris has mentioned to me a number of times over the years.
Anxiety
in interviews
before
and stuff,
he goes in.
Anxiety. Yeah. He goes, anyone else, you're a fucking liar if you don't get it.
Yeah.
And that's where you have to be so admiring of Darren Till. You know, I put out a clip from the Eurobash interview we did a couple of months ago. Yeah. And he said when he walked out, he was extremely angry against Masvidal. He said he'd never felt that before in his career. That was a defensive mechanism for him to try and eradicate those nerves. So listen, the maturity, I just couldn't believe it. I was just going, we're seeing a guy, same as Kevin Lee to a certain extent, we're seeing a guy evolving as a person in front of our eyes here, and a mentality. And there was a lot of humbleness in that interview. And listen, you got to appreciate guys like that. We don't have enough of them in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, yeah. Look, and
loved it.
But look at this. Like, it's not even just that. Like, the two losses. Like, he had visa issues up until, like, a day before the fight.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, visa issues, right? You contemplate everything in. He's just had a kick.
Knee injury.
Visa issue. He's been knocked out.
It's a knee injury.
Twice. Knee injury. You know, anxiety. Really bad anxiety going into the cage.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Matured Darren Till. I think we're going again, and I think we're going strong.
I thought he was fucked, right? I'm not, like, be honest.
We were tweeting
I thought he was fucked because he was meant to do an interview with me, not for Eurobash, on Wednesday. And then this visa stuff started coming out, and then they were like, UFC were trying to get the interview started, and then they were like, look, I just don't think he's going to be able to. And I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah, he's not making the walk.
Yeah, it's like this. But that was thought of, like, up until weighing day, pretty much.
You know, he's a guy that's...
Jared Cannonier there, like...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Even though he came in heavy a pound or two, but he would have... He was getting the nods if Darren wasn't ready. But, you know, a guy who's overcome so much adversity in his life and just constantly maturing. And to still think he's only 26 years of age, we have a very special talent here in our hands. And I think to go out and do that after all what's gone on the last 12 months was actually probably the best performance of the night, in my opinion. I tweeted that out the other night in terms of taking everything together and putting it in.
Before we get on with our first interview of the day, let me just ask you, who do you want Till to fight next?
Oh, very interesting. And to be honest with you, I haven't really put much thought into it because I think, you know, give him a little bit of time to chill out and, you know, sort of... just sort of take in everything that's gone on in the last couple of months. I'm sure he's incredibly emotional after that fight, as we did see with that interview with Adam Carroll. And go check it out if you haven't already watched it. It was class. But yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe Derek Brunson, someone like that. You know, I think
I'd like to
be,
see him
be
fight
matchup.
Jack Hermanson in London. I mean, I don't think you're going to get him. Like, you need another fight before you can put him into the Stylebender situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Cannonier's there as well.
Yeah.
But I feel like in Europe, someone like Hermanson be a big fight, because Hermanson was knocking on the door. If he had to beat Cannonier.
But you know, for Darren.
Is it a step back, are you thinking?
You know, maybe is it, you know, sort of easier way into the division? I know you're.
All right, he's already gone in.
I know. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about maybe get.
They've ruined that for him.
Get a number of fights together before he.
But you can't go from fight number 3 to fight number 15. They fucked that up. That's not my fault.
Yeah. No, I agree.
I mean, I'd say anyone in the top 10.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, anyone in the top 10. I'd like to see Derek Brunson fight.
But you know, Darren. I mean, if he's willing to take Kevin Gastelum after two straight losses, that's you know, he's probably going, no, I want Izzy.
Yeah, I'm like,
come
Izzy,
best of luck to you, mate, getting a fight in Anfield right away.
Oh, it's not happening.
Winning one fight doesn't get, you don't get to tell the champion where he's fighting.
Listen,
mate.
this whole shite of stadium shows in Europe, let's just, well, let's, right, we've been parapping on base for 10 years. Just draw a line under it, lads. Never happening. It's not going to happen. Like, fucking Raider Stadium next July in the States, not in Europe. Fucking forget it, dudes.
Right, lads, let's get on with the first interview of the day. It's a big weekend in Ireland because Cage Warriors is coming home with a big Irish roster this time. I remember the Three Arena show wasn't really the same because they didn't have as much Irish traction on it. So this time I feel like we're actually going to see the next generation of UFC fighters from Ireland with Rhys McKay at the top of the card, guys like Ian Garry on the card there. Right, so we're going to get on with this. Well, season was 16 minutes. We talked to Graham Boylan, the controversial CEO of Cage Warriors, who always, in fairness, every time he's been on this show, he has knocked it out of the park.
And he always does, man.
And I promise you that he has done it once again here. So we'll see you in about 16 minutes. All the best. And now we are joined by the great Graham Boylan, who is returning home this weekend at Cork. I mean, does that feel good for you? Is this special for you? Because it's very special for a lot of people in Irish MMA that this is happening, especially in the Neptune.
It's nice to go back to Neptune Stadium. It's kind of where it all began for us when we took over the show. So to go back there, 2019, when it was 2011 when we were there, Conor and Duffy, had Rosie fighting there, Aisling, Cahill. So to go back there on November 9th with a whole new wave of talent that we're going to look to develop is a fitting first stepping stone, considering that's where we started when we built the last wave of talent. So
that's what is really exciting about this for me personally, Graham. Like, I mean, we don't have that many fighters in the UFC anymore. The fighters that we have, the Irish fighters we have, are Conor McGregor and Joe Duffy, both guys who have come from Cage Warriors. And I guess, with you guys coming back here and doing this show in the Neptune, it's really making me believe that that path has been built again. The likes of Rhys McKay, who a lot of people feel is the next guy that could go from either Northern Ireland or Republic of Ireland. Is that what this is for you? I can remember in the press release it did have something like, this is going to be a home for Irish fighters. And as we know, this is the path to the UFC in Europe.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I've said to a few people, There's a bunch of young pro fighters who are, they're either 1-2-0 or 3-4-5. There are amateurs who are making their pro debut, and I believe the time is right that there's a little undercurrent of guys, your likes of your Ian Garry's, your Paul Hughes, your Rhys McKay's down south. You've got the two boys making a debut. Aaron McGuire, his brother, you've got Jack McGuire, John Mitchell. You know, there's a little undercurrent, I believe, that's there right now that we can start developing. And I'd imagine within 12 months, you're going to start seeing some very high-level potential Irish UFC talent coming through.
That's always referred to as the golden era, right? With Siri, you know, McGregor, Pendred, Fields. I'm leaving out loads of people, I know I am, but you know, that golden era there, is it too early to try and compare, you know, with this current crop that you've just been speaking about there, and of course McKay, McColligan as well from up north?
No, I think it's the Irish invasion version too. You know, I think that's where this is going to end. We're doing November 9th to wake the country up to the talent that's there. We'll do Belfast early, first quarter next year. And then from there, we may go back to Cork again. We'll do Belfast again. We may finish in Dublin. But when we do finish in Dublin, we'll finish with a full arena of all Irish talent. Talent that's going to go on to the UFC.
There's been lots of questions. You know, when KSW were here, they did a show in the Three Arena and they had a lot of trouble. Like, it's not something that was spoken about really publicly, but there was no doubt about it. You know, how has organizing an event in Ireland been? Like, has it been difficult dealing with the safety standards and IMA and the different things that you have to do to put an event on here? Has that been difficult?
Just to clarify, the safety standards are no different to what we would do in any Cage Warriors show anyway. For those who are listening that may not know, Cage Warriors is one of the founding members of Safe MMA, and we've been the backbone of Safe MMA for many years. So that side of things is nothing different to us. It's no change. We're doing it. It's just another show. As regards this IMA thing, it's been brought up to me a couple of times. Not heard anything from them. Don't know who they are. Know nothing about them. And I have no inkling as to what they're possibly going to want from Cage Warriors. And if they had, they left it a bit late. It's 7 days to the show.
Is there any fear that, you know, something could happen the day before the event or something where, you know, the supposed governing body, as IMA is, puts a spanner in the works here or anything? Because, you know, people have seen you and the president of that body, John Kavanagh, kind of going back and forth a bit on social media. Like, I mean, is there any part of you that could be like, you know, there could be a light bit of trouble here with this event?
But I don't understand what that trouble could be. I mean, if you can pinpoint exactly what that trouble could be, then great, pinpoint it. Because as far as I know, there's nothing I need to do, and our lawyers are quite solid on this. There is nothing we need to do with IMA to put on the show that we're putting on. And if they want to do that, then fine, bring it on. You know, we got pretty good lawyers on our side too that, you know, if you want to stop anything or try and stop anything, then you better have good cause, because Cage Wars is the safest, longest running organization in Europe. We have a history of a number of shows. We have a history of all sorts of safety aspects. And if another promoter wants to come in and stop or cause problems with Cage Warriors, then so be it. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a promoter here, right?
Well, yes, a promoter sometimes.
Yeah, we're talking about promoters, and that promoter wants to come and do anything about the show that's happening in 10 days, then, you know, come on.
How exciting is this guy in, Gary? Because I just spoke to him here, and I've been very excited about him even before he transitioned to pro. And it was great to see you guys snap him up, because this is a guy that we consider a blue chip prospect. Like, I mean, have you seen much of him? Have you spent much time around him or his team? What's your impression of him?
He can talk. Ian can talk. He's certainly got an energy about him. But he's showing... he's showing all the signs of going to the top. He wants to go to the top. He wants to be in the UFC. He knows the path he has to take. He's showing some serious maturity at a very young age in the fight game. You know, he's willing to listen, which is always a huge plus when it comes to developing young talent, because young talent get 3, 4, 5 wins in the trot and they want to go to the UFC now. He's smart, he knows what he's doing, and he wants that UFC tag, and I strongly believe he's well on his way to on the road to completing that task.
A lot of media members from this part of the world believe that McKee, as I mentioned earlier, will be the next guy from North and South, maybe considered for one of those UFC spots. I was speaking to him today. He believes he could be 3 fights away from that with Cage Warriors. Even, you know, it could take that long. I mean, do you feel as though if Reese goes in at welterweight, this is obviously his debut, and makes a pressure against like a battle-hardened dude like Hakan Foss, I mean, is he immediately in that conversation? Maybe it's not going to be his next fight, but is he there or thereabouts in the welterweight title picture as far as you're concerned?
A big win for Reese on November the 9th puts him in the conversation, yes. You know, he's a solid prospect. He's got a good record. He's got all the attributes to go again, like Ian Gary and others who we feel are going to go all the way. So does Reese. And I think Reese is leading the charge in that, purely based on his experience, the amount of fights he's had. I think he's the next guy in Ireland to possibly walk down that path and take it all on board. But he's got a dangerous, dangerous test with Hakan Foss. You know, Hakan Foss's record is, you could look at it and roll your eyeballs, but that guy is a dangerous, dangerous animal when it comes to his skill set. So it's a big test for Reese.
What's it like for you, right? Because you're so involved with these guys' careers. Like, obviously, we saw Jack Shore, we saw Nicholas Dalby getting re-signed this year. What's the emotion in you at that time? Because obviously, you manage these guys, but it's also your promotion, right? Like, I mean, you know that those guys, they're no longer available for selection for Cage Warriors. Like, I mean, is it bittersweet in a way when you see those guys kind of transition into the UFC?
It can be, but it's crystal clear from the beginning, from the get-go, what the goals are. You know, we're not bringing somebody into an organization to say, you're going to stay with me for the rest of your life. You're not going to the UFC. You're staying here. This is it. This is it. Cage Warriors, you're not going fucking anywhere else. Okay? So being 100% crystal clear and honest with this, we know from the get-go, every person that signs a contract with Cage Warriors, we know what their goal is. We know where they want to go. We know what we got to do to get them there. And providing they listen, they go there. If they don't listen, obviously, then they kind of fuck up themselves. They take too many, they try and jump too many steps at once. And then that's on their hands. But when they do listen, 9 times out of 10, they get to where they want to be. Nicholas listened, Jack listened, and look where they are.
Another man who you said on Saturday when you were in Birmingham, you said, this guy is ready, Joy Herbert, the Black Country Basher, not Badger, as I do call him sometimes, which he's not very happy about. But it's Banger, yeah, I'm sorry. But he looked sensational, okay? And there's obviously Mason Jones is also there, who looked sensational as well in his last fight. Two brilliant prospects, there's no doubt about it. I was speaking to Joy just yesterday, and he said, you know, he can't, he would prefer if Cage Warriors, which you have done in the past, bring in an international name, like a Brazilian or an American, like someone who has a bit more name value than internationally, say, than Mason, who would be able to, you know, stimulate interest on the UFC's part. Where is your mind with that? Is it way too early, given that this only happened at the weekend, to be considering this? I mean, do you kind of see where he's coming from, or is Mason Jones definitely the fight to make?
No. Mason is one of the new breed fighters where Mason listens, you know? Mason, for me, I think, is going to go to the UFC. I think he'll be a Cage Warriors champion. But he's also very, very sensible in the fact that he knows what he wants to do. And I've had a conversation with Mason already. We have a set plan for Mason for 2020. Jai, on the other hand, I think Jai is and should be off to the UFC.
Done enough, not no other fight?
I don't think... I think Jai and Mason are on two different levels in their careers right now. And I think Jai is at a stage where his next fight should be in the UFC. And I think Mason's the one to pick up the slack when Jai goes. You've also got Paddy there. Mm. Paddy's there. You also got Donovan Desme, who's there. Mm. You got Joe McCorgan there. That division's stacked. It's a shark tank, you know? It is a shark tank when it comes to the 55-pound division. But there's just four names, and, you know, other people in that division probably kick me or tweet me or Instagram me and call me all sorts of names if I don't say their name. No, but when you're on the spot talking like this, you know, just certain names jump into your head, and others do. Don't jump into your head, it should have done. You kind of kick yourself out because you didn't say their name, but, you know, there's nothing I can do about that. But I think Joy should go to the UFC. You know, what he did to Kane Carrizosa, I probably fucked his surname up too.
No,
but
I think that's what I was
Yeah. What he did to him and getting him out of there in one round in the fashion that he did that is just unbelievable. What he did to Jack Grant, which nobody was expecting, that was just mind-boggling. I thought he'd be gone then. But then I had a chat with Jai, and Jai's like, look, if I have to defend it again, I want a big name, I want a UFC tag, I want XYZ. We went and got it for him, and he just, less than a round, got him out. Mm-hmm. So it's like, he kind of needs to go. He needs to be where he should be right now. The guy's elite, elite level, pinpoint accuracy striking. You know, he will take you out from anywhere.
I agree with you. I couldn't agree more, especially after that performance and knee finish, everything perfect. Just one final question, because I guess I never put a bow on this properly. The surface after the Dalby and Houston fight, right? So there was all this talk. Dalby said he doesn't even think there's a need to get the canvas down rather than the vinyl, because he said if it happens just once in the history of Cage Warriors, as long as those guys are going, they're probably safe enough that they're going to get away with the vinyl for a long time again. Mark Goddard was like, maybe they will do it because it cost them the closure on that fight. Where are you with it? Like, I mean, it's a lot logistically, right, to have a different canvas every single event. That's what I hear anyway.
Yeah. To try and get a canvas covering every event It has to be different every event. So, you know, you get a new sponsor in, canvas needs to be changed. A TV broadcaster in, canvas needs to be changed. A new arena, canvas needs to be changed. Logistically, it's just not viable. We're not the UFC. The UFC have a different canvas every event. We're not the UFC. We're a European organization. We happen to be the best European organization at growing talent. You know, 90-something, 93 guys to the UFC. What we know what we're doing, and we do it well. We've had one incident in over 12 years of my time here where it was a bloodbath and the fight had to be stopped. If we were to get that fight back on a rematch, it probably wouldn't happen again. Yeah. So we don't feel we need to change anything in what we're doing. And even just to clarify on that, on a canvas issue, every organization I know of in Europe has the same canvas.
Right.
They do the same thing. Everyone's got the same thing. It's a vinyl canvas, you know. There's very, very few organizations that will be using a canvas as a floor covering, you know. So UFC, you know, maybe Bellator, but they're owned by Viacom. It's not their money, you know. It's Viacom's money. And that's a hell of a lot of money to be pissing down the toilet every time you put a Bellator show on when you're spending Viacom's money like that. So they don't care about canvases. We're an Irish-owned company. Our P&L matters, and we like to keep everything on track.
Final question, promise. I know I said that already. How many fighters that we will see in Cork in the Neptune Arena do you expect to eventually sign for the UFC? And I know that's a crazy thing, but potentially, what do you think?
If you're going to go specifically on the Cork event, November 9th, just that event, I would say 3. We can figure those 3 out when we get there.
I'd say 3.
I'd say, and 3 would be, I'd say it'll be 3 Irish guys that go into the UFC.
By 2021?
2 by 21, and then 3 by the end of 21. On this this is specific November 9th card, end of 2021.
Thanks so much, Graham, man. It's a pleasure to speak to you always.
And there he was, Graham Boylan. Always a pleasure, never a chore. He brought the heat again. A lot of issues there, you know, insofar as the things he said about Emma. I know he said the same to you.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I think it's worrying going into this.
But the thing is, right, I was talking to Sean Sheehan about this actually on the day. I was like, I don't know when Emma would get involved. Like, you know, because I'm not a promoter. Like, I don't know if they're waiting for a prompt from Save MMA and then they get involved or whatever. It's just weird that he hasn't heard a thing from the governing body.
He has had zero contact is what he said.
Man. And
it's very, very strange because...
It's so confusing. The scene here is so confusing.
It's so confusing. It's very even hard for us to work out. And I think I said that to Graham as well. And because of the lack of contact or, you know, who is there to reach out and speak to, because we don't tend to get answers when we do reach out. And that's sort of the worrying thing that I have.
But it's also a nod to the conflict of interest, because
of course it is.
What he said to me was like, why do I have to tell another, why is another promoter telling me what way I should run a show? Yeah. Like, and look, you can say what you want about John Kavanagh, but he has literally promoted Bellator events, like 100%. Shown up at press days, all this kind of stuff.
Wearing Bellator t-shirts.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some type of relationship going on there.
I think he actually tweeted.
Obviously there was a lot of questions about his match, like is he playing a part in the matchmaking, which...
I think he tweeted before as well, straight blast Bellator.
That was always going to be... This is the thing we talked about from the dawn of time with this Emma deal. John seems to be too... Like, just as a president, I get that. Like, as a figurehead, it looks great because he's so internationally recognised, so respected in the sport internationally. But when you're a guy that really has to drop the hammer on other promoters and they see you as a competitor, that's going to be a conflict immediately.
Massively. You've said it all there, 100%. Straight down the line, that's the way it looks to everyone else, anyone who's any brains looking on in the situation.
And John gets annoyed with us for even talking about this, but I mean,
we have to
this
talk
is our
about
job.
It.
Like.
It's like, there's been this fucking zero pro.
But
shows
everyone's talking
country.
About it, you know? It's just weird. Yes. Like, you know, people keep saying it to us, like, why aren't like,
we don't
why
know. Yeah. Look, but the problem is, where have the other shows been? There's a reason the other shows haven't been in town.
We had that, we'll talk about the whole Cage Warriors thing a bit later when we're previewing the show, but. Like, I mean, this is like the Ian Garry thing that propped up from the Sean Sheehan interview. Like, this is maybe the fifth or sixth time this has happened. You know, as in, like, the Cage Warriors v. Bellator thing has propped up and it's made a huge stir. Even though I can remember when Nathan Grayson moved.
Yeah.
Like, there was loads of stuff. There's been how many online spats between Kavanagh, Boylan. I mean, It just keeps on storing up his head.
Listen, these fighters have an option. I think everyone in this country has an option in terms of where they want to go, what path they want to do in mixed martial arts. I know we've said this.
You said it just earlier.
But follow your path. Go what you want to fucking do. Let's not pull any bullshit over it. Bellator is very much the secondary promotion in the States.
In the States, 100%.
So, you know, it's UFC for these guys, and I think that's the path they want to go. They're going to cage wars. That's it. That's the
right. We'll get back to that a bit later. And it's one of those things that me and you feel like we get stuck in every week nearly. I'm not even messing, man. Every week we need to talk about this. So we're going to move on. We'll talk about MSG in a bit more detail, put a bit of shine on some of the other fights.
Brilliant card.
First of all, I think just to cap off Masvidal and Diaz, I thought the fight was great. I really enjoyed the fight. I really enjoyed the fight as long as it lasted. Shame that it ended the way it did. Ironic, because it's the bad motherfucker title and they're stopping him because of a cut, but what can you do? Kelvin Gastelum must feel a bit stupid for taking that fight in hindsight.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he had it all to lose there, you know. But he saw Till as a big name, which I'm...
I think he saw Till as a big opportunity from what he looked upon in his last two fights, and then him obviously coming up. I think Kelvin Gastelum went into that fight cocky and, you know...
Didn't touch him.
Yeah, and look at the weight issues again from Kelvin Gastelum. It looks to me as though you're going, you know, it looks like he's getting disciplinary action now after the whole incident of scale.
Elbow gate.
Why are you getting a tail put around you if you're underweight?
Yeah.
144, 184, bullshit, right?
Optical illusion. Free Kelvin.
That's what she said. All right. Kelvin Gastelum, I think, really needs to address something that's going on. There's something going on there in his head that there's maybe a lack of motivation, a lack of something going on. Because if you're acting like that, you know, you're not getting on weight properly without any controversy. There's something knocking on the door there. He had the same problems.
But I feel as though he kind of showed us that there is a situation there in the pre-fight when they showed, they went in the countdown show, they went back to his first day back in the gym and had all the gym members showing up to congratulate him, clap him into the gym and all. It's like, weird. I feel like it was some type of issue mentally maybe or something where he needed that support network around him when he came back. Hope he is getting help with that if that is the case. But still, what really impressed me about Till as well is the fact that he was able to just bolt back up onto his feet every time a takedown was even nearly happening.
Yeah, and look,
I think that's the energy from the lack of a cut, you know?
Definitely in his defense work against the cage. Brilliant as well. Like, you know, getting the underhooks in, reversing it at times. Really, really good stuff from Darren.
Can't do that against Yoel Romero, unfortunately.
Well, that's it. Yoel will probably snap your arms off. But listen, Darren even admitted to it afterwards. He did feel Kelvin's power. But in terms of Gastelum, I think there's a guy there that needs to address a lot of things in his career. Maybe he's a little bit too overconfident from where he actually is in his career. That Adesanya fight, obviously, coming off that one as well. Totally different performance, but listen, Darren Till neutralised him, did what he had to do to win, and I think that's very, very important in terms of Darren's career trajectory. That I can, oh, we got it right from that. But it is two losses, going up a weight class. It's a big, big, big night for Darren Till, the biggest of his career, in my opinion, today.
A man he fought before, Mr. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. A lot of people feel Thompson beat Till that night in Liverpool, but
I did.
What a performance by Thompson against Luque, one of the most vicious fighters in that bracket. What a way to return. Showcase. Yeah. I mean, it was
fabulous.
It was a signature performance.
You know, first round, it could have probably gone either way. Luque landed a little bit against the cage, some heavy shots. But if you look at the second, third rounds, Wonderboy really came into it and totally outclassed him on the feet. Unbelievable performance from probably one of the greatest mixed martial arts artists of our fucking generation. Jesus, I'm getting losing my fucking speech.
Definitely in the striking situations, he's one of the best.
Can I ask you about one thing about Thompson? And I noticed this, and I noticed this during the week, and I want to see what you think about it. And,
his language is terrible. Yeah, he needs to stop cursing.
Hey, baby. Right, but he said in an interview before the fight that he's not out there to hurt a guy. It's it's very much in terms of going out there to show his skill set of mixed martial. I think
he really fucked up if he didn't go out there to hurt Vincente Luque because he battered him.
No, but I'm talking in terms of maybe his finishing ability. There was times there where I think Stephen could have really stuck it on him and sort of backed off a little bit. I'd love to see Stephen maybe get
naming
a bit
someone,
more
is that what
of killer instinct in him because he has. I
enjoyed every second of watching that. But I understand what you're saying. Brilliant performance, no doubt about it. Back with a bang. Derek Lewis, not so much. Gets a win, but the fight wasn't...
It was fun to watch. It always is with Lewis. But, yeah, it wasn't a great technical fucking battle or anything like that. But I had him winning the fight. I had no problem with it. I saw a few people were saying they thought Blagov won it.
Black eye. Even off.
Right?
Black off.
We're fucking wrecking you out here.
But, come on, Bulgaria. In the interest of supporting the European sport, yeah, I do think Black eye won, and it's a joke.
I was like, what the fuck is this guy? So, but listen, it was a typical Lewis fight. You know, looked out at times. I think he plays possum for the crack these days and pretends he's dead and then comes back and just to wow people. But, I very much enjoyed it. I thought it was a great spectacle.
Kevin Lee then with that disgraceful head kick knockout of Gregor Gillespie, man. Nearly lost me lunch when he fucking head kicked
that, man. Oh. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. It was like, Jesus. But listen, again... I think the post-fight interview, another guy like on the lines of Darren Till, a guy who's, you know, battled back, obviously had a lot of adversity, but it was mad just to see, I think, the calmness in Kevin Lee, and the cool, calm, calculated, even his personality. He was a very, very angry man in the past, and I think maybe it's been the case with Kevin that he's addressed these emotional issues that he's had. Obviously,
we're like bleeding Dr. Phil this week, aren't we?
We are, yeah, but
for fuck's sake.
That's the way it sort of turned into. But listen, a Kevin Lee with a mindset like that coming in, that cool, calm, calculated, is going to spank a lot of people in that 55-pound division. Incredibly impressive performance.
One of my stars of the whole week, Corey Anderson. Unbelievable.
Don't sleep on him.
Unbelievable pre-fight interview when he did the Dominance MMA media day a few weeks back, where he's like, you know, basically fuck this. Like, I mean, what the else do I need to do? He goes and he upends Johnny Walker in the most devastating fashion possible.
That right was sensational.
I thought it was going to be like a real gritty display that would win it for Corey, but he bet the shit out of him. And then he goes backstage and he basically puts the UFC on ice, man. He literally flames them. And I feel like he's making Dana White speak about him. It's not the most glowing terms, but I mean, you'd be mental to suggest. I don't like that about Dana. He's nearly suggesting he can go somewhere else. Like, you're like, dude, rubbish. What the fuck do you want this guy to do?
You need guys in your light heavyweight division, and I think, you know.
And the guy's just after taking out one of your big prospects. You're going to have to deal with something with him. You're going to have to do something with Corey Anderson.
Dana's going to look back on this and change his mind from what he said, like he always does.
Not a needle mover.
The dust has settled. Listen, Corey Anderson coming out with that, and the badass attitude as well. I love that. That's why people start talking sometimes. Sometimes you have to do it. We've actually seen both spectrums of it this week.
No, but I think it's genuine. Genuine aggression, genuine anger. It doesn't feel fabricated at all. He feels genuinely fuck the UFC at the moment.
But look at the whole situation, even how with Johnny Walker, and he apologised obviously after for sort of getting in his face after he won the fight. And
that's genuine rage.
That's genuine rage, because people have been writing this guy off for God knows how long, and they have. And to go out and make a statement like that, we thought it was going to be a grindy, greedy display, but he fucking upended him. Just a solid shot. Give him the shot, man. Give the guy a shot.
Till was the only real success in terms of European MMA on this card, but Makwan Amerikani got found out, didn't he, against Shane Burgos?
He did, and I think we possibly saw it coming, and got taken out in the feet. There was a very evident issues with the gas tank. Maybe he, you know.
People think that's an issue with SBG. I don't know. What do you think? Like, I guess because they see Connor.
Maybe they're prominent fighters. Their tanks aren't as good as maybe they need to be where they're at. But in general, I don't see a problem. I don't really. Look at Peter Queeley. Like, did that guy ever had a problem with his cardio?
Oh, he's very fit, man.
Well, there you go. So, no, I think that's just one or two fighters. But yeah, it was. A performance where I think he sort of threw his gas tank out in the first round, and he just looked terrible.
Takedown attempts were awful. And a wrestler his caliber, like, I think that directly points to stamina. You know, like when he's shooting from so far out and it's just not doing anything. Burgos a unit. One thing that kind of came out of this was a lot of people talking about John Kavanagh's cornering advice to him after the second round.
He
said to
Kurdistan.
Him, "You're tired now, but your people are suffering," or something.
Like, he said,
"You're suffering now, but your people are suffering," or something.
Yeah, it was in relation to the Kurdistani people.
I know that was a big thing that Makwan had brought into this fight week as well, about his representation of the Kurds. He seemed to highlight it even more than usual.
Yeah, I think John should have been probably dishing out a bit of tactical advice, because that was clearly a massive issue after that first round, or after that for a second round.
Could he just be trying to appeal to, like, look, John is looking at him and he's saying, right, he's bollocks. Like, there's nothing I can really. Like, he needs to just hang in there at this stage, and he's probably clutching for something that's just raw emotion.
But yeah, sometimes it does work.
Yeah.
It depends on obviously knowing your fighter. We don't know what Makwan
doesn't give us interviews. Yeah.
That's pretty much it. So, you know, sometimes if a coach knows a fighter well, he'll try and push the buttons on an emotional level to get more out of him. Or sometimes if you're a guy who likes to listen, he'll point out some tactical
awareness. But clearly Macklin was out of his feet, so maybe it was a good idea from John. I don't
not
really know.
An ideal way to start your US journey for Macklin Americani. And I just felt as though we were going to get some real activity out of him now. And now the loss comes, you're like, oh, that's going to knock this back for a while.
It is definitely going to knock it back for a while. And he doesn't fight too often as well, so hopefully he can...
Once a year in London was the way we were going. Shaboy's an unbelievable left head kick knockout of Brad Tavares. Brilliant. Jairzinho Rozenstruik took out another European Belarusian, Andrei Arlovsky, counter left hook.
Listen,
walked onto it, fade away left.
Yeah, you know, listen, when Arlovsky's gone down so easily in fights, you know, I'm going to say it again. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. The guy should not be in there. I think that's eight of his last 13 fights he's lost. He's had a 5-fight losing streak in the UFC.
Former UFC champion,
fights,
right?
Former UFC, it doesn't matter. 40 years of age, he is... You know, he should not be in there. And then 10 minutes afterwards, he's on his Instagram going, I apologise to everyone. I'm ready to go again.
He's ready to go again, though.
He needs to take a massive look at his health and safety and well-being. I feel
surely if he's good enough to put up a story on Instagram, he can fight. No.
Uncomfortable watching Andrei Arlovsky in the octagon and anyone else who doesn't feel the same. And someone tweeted me saying, oh, he put in a brilliant performance. He put in one good performance in his last 12 fights.
Which one was that? Line.
Probably Ben Rothwell last time, maybe that.
He's back. He's back.
Rubbish. it's uncomfortable. I don't like seeing it.
Would he be able to put up a story 10 minutes after a fight if he wasn't fully fit?
Peter, let's move on.
Caitlin Chookagian, surely next for that title after that one.
Who else is there really? A poor fight.
I don't think it's going to really help Shevchenko's case for putting on an exciting fight Caitlin.
I like Caitlin. I think she's a good boxer. She did exactly what we said she would do, get in and out quickly. She did that, but she's not going to trouble Valentina Shevchenko, in my opinion.
No, I don't think so either. Loyman Good, very good knockout, a chance round counter.
With his foot blown out as well.
And Hakeem Dawoodu, split decision win again over Julio Arca. That tops that bad boy off.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
I got all of my picks bar one right.
What's the one you got wrong?
The main event. Everything else. That's not a bad...
You picked Johnny Walker.
I didn't pick Johnny Walker.
On the show last week you did.
I did not. Listen back. I picked Corey Anderson. Thank you very much.
I'll be listening back.
You listen back, dude. I picked Corey
Anderson. Have you listened back already?
Yeah. I picked Corey Anderson.
I'm going to go back and specifically find
wrong.
It.
You're going to be wrong. I still grind it out. We both agreed on that one.
All right. Just a bit of self-praise there from Niall again, just before we go back.
Every week.
So we'll go back. That's you and Sean Jeansville. That's not for me. Right, we'll go on to our second interview today. The reason why we're doing this so early is because I'm helping Paddy Hoolan with his book launch today in town somewhere. we got a word with Paddy. Book is brilliant. I read it a couple of months ago. I'm sorry, Gil McMillan. I get special perks. But, we'll talk to Paddy. We'll talk all about what his journey really since he left the UFC. And we'll be back in about 10 minutes. Well, I'm here now with Paddy Hoolan, who's just successfully launched his book, which I think is going to be a big, big hit this Christmas. We're in Club 22 on the south side of Dublin. And once again, I've witnessed you have about 100 people eating out of the palm of your hand there for that Q&A. I mean, it must feel good to still be able to captivate people the way you do beyond your first choice career, which was fighting. Like, I've seen you doing it in your podcast. I'm seeing you do it as a coach, as a gym owner, as a politician, and now as an author. It's pretty incredible. Do you recognize that? It's a pretty special thing that you have.
I think it's charisma, I think is what people say. So I never knew really what it was, but when I fought, like, people were sitting there and they'd be talking, and then even if you look at the video back, you look at the crowd, people look up, and there's just something about energy and that kind of charisma that when it comes with somebody that has too much energy to fit in their body, you know what I mean? That's me, you know. So I'm able to, when I come into a room like this, spread it across the whole room, and it's and you see that reaction from it, and it's, I'm getting better at it, PT.
Yeah, you're amazing at it. He's just, points arrived here and all. Woo-hoo! This is amazing. Paddy, your book is amazing. And I don't say that as a guy who's been a friend of yours, who's known you for the last 10 years. I say that as a guy who got an email that says, here, have a look at this book. And I'm going, I know Paddy a long time. I mean, nothing's going to shock me in here. And you could tell the people, after every chapter, wasn't I texting you going, holy shit, man. I mean, how hard was it for you to bear yourself the way you have? Because it is, you pull no punches at all in this book. It's you've left yourself open. And a politician to do this as well, like, I was like, this is incredibly brave. Is that a hard thing to do, to kind of tap into yourself? And did Richard have to do a lot of work with you to get that kind of stuff out of you?
Not really. Like, if you listen to the tapes back, and the idea is, like, I want to just delete the tapes now, and it's out. It is what it is, because, like, when you're sitting there writing the book, it's a hard process. It can take hours and hours of tape work, and you're like, what did I say? Did I say this? Did I say that? Did I say it the right way? The politician part of it is... It helps me. It makes me powerful to expose my background, myself. Because no one's ever going to be able to pull that out and be like, oh, well, really, look at him now. Look at what he said there. And that's what people do. Because when you try to grow up, when you try to build up, the people are trying to rip you back down because they like you getting up. They love that. They get the numbers off you coming up, and then they want the numbers off you coming down. And that's the way it works. So to me, I am going to be a different type of, say, politician or activist. I'm going to be somebody that people are like, oh, so I read his book, I know about him, like, I know that. He had the same problem with me, with my ma, or he had the same trouble with such and such that I had. And then they realise that we're all very, very the same, and then we put this hat on these politician lads that they know what they're doing, and they have the interest of the country in their hands, and they don't. They clearly don't. The place is fucking in bits. Look at it. As I said, it's a great example, as I said, of what the idea is. If this is a football team, we're making loads of money. The money part is doing well, but we're getting relegated every season. If that was football fans, they would not stand for it. And that's exactly what's happening in this country.
You, the thing that stuck with me when I read it is I was far too interested in the people you were fighting in the cage, when really the most interesting thing about you is all the fighting you do just with genuine obstacles that are put in front of you in your life. And, you know, when I said it up there today, when I was speaking to the people there, I mean, where you were 3 years ago, you've 5 new careers since then. Like, I mean, that's incredible. Like, do you just have an automatic ability to knock down those walls when they get put in front of you? Or is it a rigorous process for you as well? Or have you just kind of got into this mentality where I'm not going to let these people kind of drag me down, which is a reoccurring theme in the book?
Listen, fighting was just one thing to me. You know what I mean? I love fighting more than anything.
But you're always fighting. That's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't matter if it's not actual combat.
Yeah, fighting is always is a part of life, and it's always going to be a part of life. But when I was coming up fighting, that wasn't my greatest ability. My greatest ability was to be part of that team and to give back to that team and to develop things that MMA is benefiting from now, in the idea of mindset and examples and breaking down walls there as well. Like, there's many people that walk us to the cage, but we walk into that cage and that door gets closed, and then it's you and you're kind of on your own, you know, whether you like it or not. And that's the true reality. And even when you win or lose, you'll probably share the wins with people, but the losses don't get really shared with people, you know. And I understand that myself now as a coach. It's like the losses don't get shared, you know. And I had a lot on my plate when I was fighting as well, you know. So I had a kid and nobody else had a kid. So I had another brain and another person to be thinking of as well. So that was a huge part of what I was doing when I was fighting. But my problem now is that I have really good ideas, and I just don't have enough time to implement them. And I mean, I have ideas for housing policies, ideas to stop pollution, right? Like, mental ideas, and they come true in the middle of the night sometimes. Sometimes it can be dreaming, the same way it happens.
You used to deal with the submissions.
And it still happens. It still happens. Comes true now where I'm like, I can think of a policy and I say to Chelsea, what about this? Imagine people did this, and she's like, that's really good. Like, the other day I was in, I put a picture up of me talking at a Sinn Féin meeting the other day, and I was in like a museum up the road. I rolled in the tracksuit. I didn't know it was nice dress, and it's like, right, all of a sudden I'm standing here and I'm giving a tracksuit, and if you look at it, the president of Sinn Féin then is sitting there and she's like looking up at me, and like, she told me, like I need to get some of your wisdom, I need to get some of your, like, and I'm like, Mary Lou, like, I'm fanning out here, you know what I mean? And then, like, I'm walking around the Dáil the other day, and I'm like, this is not so scary anymore. Like, why wouldn't I be allowed to go to the school tour to the Dáil when I was a kid? You know what I mean? And now I'm rocking in, like, and I'm walking into a room, and it's like, the hooligan, Come out of my office. Where we are at
this. Oh, yeah. Someone told me earlier today that Jerry Adams was exclusively referring to you as the hooligan when he's met.
We're talking about Big Jerry A here, you know what I mean? Big Jerry A. Like,
that's amazing.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Like, and to me, these, like, someone would say to me, who do you admire in politics? And it's like, Jerry Adams. And people are like, how could you? Jerry Adams is exactly what a politician should be. Jerry Adams has been shot 5 times and still going. You know what I mean?
He's like Tupac.
He's like, exactly. That's what he is kind of like. And the idea is that, like, these people are us. And like, I get people saying, like, I got someone texting me yesterday. And this is how simple it can be, Pete, right? And he turns around and he says, yeah, you're in Sinn Féin, but they voted against putting up the living wage or the minimum wage for people. And it's like, yeah, but they voted for a living wage. You all wanted the minimum wage. And then I sent him an article. He's like, geez, I didn't know that. I'm like, publicly, you literally just went at my neck there. And if this was a polling booth, you wouldn't have voted for Sinn Féin because of someone that someone else told you. Yeah, so yeah, we're not thinking. And the idea is, now we're in a situation, PT, where people that vote for the leading parties, the parties that are trying to align with these and all, we need to be very careful, because now we're in a situation where we are shamed because of our vote. It does make a sense. And if a kid, this kid Sam that everyone was talking about eating on the streets cardboard, if you don't vote, and if you vote for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, you share that shame. And unfortunately, that is the way it is, because if you don't vote, you don't have an ability for us to change this stuff. And I can see it now, because I'm in there trying to change it. But if you don't have the vote, doesn't matter.
Can I ask you one question that a lot of people get the answers to in Hooligan? And it's something that, you know, you spoke to Ariel Helwani about. It's the John thing. And I mean, I don't feel as though there was any daggers thrown there in the book, but I certainly understand where you're coming from with the situation there. Was that hard to do because of, you probably felt the sense of it growing when you did the recent interview with Ariel after you got elected and everything like that? And it became a thing people were talking about. Like, I'd be speaking to American guys, they'd be like, wow, did you see Paddy? Like, I mean, if something's going on there with Paddy, like, this is huge, you know? And I mean, was that hard to do? Was it hard to commit to paper? Even though, as I say, I don't feel as though it's massive daggers in any kind of way. It's just explaining the situation as it happened from your point of view.
I think what happened was that a huge group of people went on and done something really, really great together. Together. And I feel that a lot of that would have been, is kind of forgotten about. Like, John doesn't really talk about us and talk about the lads that put the situation in front of what it is now, and Irish MMA as well, even the younger lads. Not that they should show their respect, but the problem with me and John was that for many, many years, I had worked for the man. I had jumped through hoops for the man. Many more hoops than he jumped through for me. He taught me the way. But a coach and a fighter, right, is a two-way process. At the start, it's a one-way process, one-way street. And you're learning from the coach. And the coach gives you the attention and time. And then it becomes a two-way street. And that's when it kind of went a little bit wrong there. So when it turns to a two-way street, people are going to start taking their view on it, or maybe they start having to look at themselves, or ego kicks in, and that's what happens. I had John's back for many years, and when it came for him to have my back, he didn't have my back, and he sat on the fence. So, and when it came to the idea to rectify it, we were asked for a fee of €5,000, and to me, it's not about the fucking money, it's about the control. It's like, you pay me, that means I'm above you. And that's all it is. I'm still a brown belt. I earned mine, you know what I mean? And there's been many reasons and many ways that John could have stepped in and done the right thing, and unfortunately he didn't. And it doesn't make me bitter. I'm just sorry that I put so much time and so much respect and love into something that, and I didn't get the return from it.
Now, I've seen, like, I mean...
That was perfect.
What I've seen with your podcast is unbelievable. I listen to it every week, and that recent episode with Ash kind of had me thinking, like, you know, not that you and Ash had massive ordeal or whatever, you know, but, you know, it's referenced in the podcast that you guys have made amends, and it's great to see you guys together again, man. It's really cool. Is that any way that could happen with John, do you think, at all?
Well, I think even if you listen to Ariel Helwani, when Ariel Helwani asked him, and he went, sure. I think that answers it. We're all from Dublin. We're not stupid. You know what I mean? We know body language very much. With John, I don't think so. I don't think he'd ever cross that bridge. You know what I mean? I think whatever happened on his side in his situation, he thinks something else. He thinks something different. But the situation was, and it is, you should have had my back. Like you said, you had my back that time when I went there and put my whole life on the line and my whole career. Like, if that gym had failed off the back of that, I would have had no livelihood. And I have a kid. I have kids, you know. So what would I be doing working in Central now? So the idea, I couldn't make up with somebody that kind of took a shot at my livelihood, if you must, you know.
How do you fit it all in, right? Because I can remember sitting with you when, the day you got elected, and I was going, you're doing the gym, doing the podcast, doing this. Now, like, you have a book. You know, it's like, how do you manage that? Like, I mean, even from a point of view of, I'm going to work on this today, and then after that, do that. How in the name of God do you juggle all this, man? I'm not even messing. I'm baffled by that. I'm baffled by it.
Did you ever see Wallace and Gromit?
No.
No. I was like, his bed tilts up and he slides down, goes into his trousers, his dog sticks the post on, the toast pops out. This is my house, PT.
I can't wait to go there.
How are you, mate? So I literally just, I'm just busy, man. I'm flat out busy.
You love being busy, don't you?
Job, I do. Well, I don't, if you look at the start few chapters of my book, I don't like to have thoughts. I like to have too much peace inside my head where I'm just thinking, you know what I mean? And I think I've left a little bit. I got the book off my chest, if you must. So,
does it free you? Does it feel therapeutic?
Absolutely. Like, people have said that to me. Wait, you feel how therapeutic it is? I was talking to Richie Sadler today. Did a podcast with him. Yeah, did a podcast with him today. And he was like, it's just such therapy. It's like therapy that you get paid for. And I was like, that's a good way of looking at it. And that's what it's like. I was able to get a lot off my chest. And not only that, but timeline and figure a lot of stuff. And there's a lot of unsaid questions to do, obviously, with me and John and with all of this kind of stuff. And people come up to me and go, like, John's so grateful for giving you that gym, isn't it? I bet you should be so grateful to him. And it's like, I can't tell you what the real story is here.
But you can now.
Well, I can. I did. I told the story, and now I don't have to answer it. People say to me, what's the story? Go ask the book. And not only that, people can go ask other people now as well. I've kind of cracked the egg in a way of like, what happened there? Because there's a huge thing, and it's called divide and conquer. Together, people are strong. Divided, people are weak.
Two quick predictions before I let you go. I think, right, I've stopped writing off you out of anything. Like, I think you can do absolutely anything you want. Do you think we'll ever see a run Paddy Hoolan for president? Because I've seen people talking about this all day. Every person that asked you to sign a book was like, sign it from the future president. A lot of people said that. And I've seen your power to compel people and to enthuse the youth of Tala, which I saw when you got elected. I mean, ever kind of simmering around your head, like, maybe I could do something even bigger than this?
Absolutely. We could have a session in Ardis Nuchtanon. No, I definitely could believe that, because what I'm looking at now is I'm looking at the situation of this place and I'm like, how not? Why couldn't we? Like, why would I ever write myself off? This is like guys, it's like us looking into the UFC back in the day. Like, we're looking at guys that we technically was just so much better than. And we could say, oh, I could beat him. Maybe, you can't say that. But I'm saying it again, and I'm saying it in a situation of, if I was the president of Ireland, I would probably represent more people on this island than the president of Ireland. And that's literally what we're talking about. And I would, you could put me as a manager for the ministers. That's what the president should be. And he should be the one talking and telling Owen Murphy and all, what, calling him into his office and saying, why is homelessness going up? You said last month that homelessness was going to go down, and now it's gone up. Answer for yourself, boy. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, it should be. And Leo should be getting dragged in and saying, listen, weird, a president doesn't really do that, and it's kind of like they have it all sewn up in all so many ways, and you don't say that, and I don't say that. So it would be a mad situation for the president thing to come up. When the last president's election was coming up, like, did you know many people in it? Oh, so if Paddy Hoolan put his name forward for it, I'm pretty sure you'd get lads out there that are fed up with doing things and saying, you know what? If he can be president, anything is possible. And that is possible.
You were the most talked about electorate even before the thing. Like, I don't know, from Blanchetown, I'm from the opposite end of the city than you. And everyone out there is like, can we vote, buddy?
And the thing is, in a presidential election, could you imagine my reach in that way? In the way of, like, we're ordinary people that, like, just go, you know what? He's like, and as I said, they go into my presidential campaign and be like, "Oh, back in 1992, he farted on a dog's head."
He did it, buddy.
You know what I mean? It's like, so you can't be president. And that's the thing. What are we looking for? A perfect president? Well, no. We're looking for somebody that has the experience to understand what it's like, right? If Leo Radcliffe was to say to me, like, yeah, but you were on the dole or something like that, I'd be like, yeah, that means I know how to budget the dole. So I know exactly what Mary down the road is talking about when she's talking about budgeting it. You don't, mate. And when your kid gets sick, I've set an A&E for 14 hours to 16 hours. You haven't. Yeah. So we're in a situation where, do we want to be ruled by people that have not took a piss in the shoes that we are walking in? Or let's give a chance. Like, what is it to you if we became president for a few years?
I'd love it.
Yeah, you'd love it. But imagine some lad that didn't love it. Like, what's it to him? How much damage can I do?
Yeah, you're right.
So let's give it a go. Let's have a go at this, you know?
Of one more, Paddy. Hooligan, number one for Christmas. Oh, that's, it gets my vote anyway. Are you confident? You know, this is a whole new world again. We don't know. But it's an amazing read. As I'll say again, I know you my whole life, pretty much. And when I was reading that, I was like, holy shit. And you got the text message to prove it. I mean, I feel like a lot of people are going to be that way. Do you feel like you can do it, number one?
Yeah. So look, why not? Like, why couldn't we? No, people buy it. And I think people will understand the story. Anybody that's out there that middle class, elite class, a working class, there's something in that book for everybody. You know what I mean? And the thing is, I've walked and been with all classes. And the thing is, I'm accepted amongst them all as well. So to me, there's something in that book for everybody. You know, like, and we all suffer from these mental spells that get us and drag us down and stuff like that. And there's times in that where I'm literally on the floor. So to me, even to read a few of them passages and then go, do you know what? Like, he's this big, tough UFC fighter, if you must, or whatever. And it's like, why not? Sometimes we're just literally delicate, and that's all right. But you have to have process of being able to get back to being strong again, you know what I mean? And so it's all right to be delicate as well at times, but you're recovering. It's like after a fight, you know? You'll be strong again.
Paddy, I love you. You're a legend. And it was a pleasure to be involved tonight. Thanks so much for inviting me.
You involved so much, Petey, because you deserve it.
And thanks so much to Paddy. Make sure you go out and check out Hooligan, which is available in all competitive bookstores. You can get it, of course, if you're one of our many listeners in the US. You can also get it online, so look into it. Let's start off with Cage Warriors. It's a big return this weekend to Ireland. For me, as I said to Graham Boylan earlier in that interview, it's all about this is the next generation who could potentially go on to be UFC fighters. Yeah. And that's really what we need. We are starving for that at the moment. And it's something that no other promotion can really get us. We can't really achieve it with any other promotion, really. You know,
it's not the same feeling with Bellator.
No. And look, Sean's interview, as we said earlier, sparked a lot of controversy. But, I mean, it does every time, this Cage Warriors and Bellator thing. Like, Ian didn't really say anything new. Yeah. These are things that have been said over and over again. We can feel like the Bellator people are feeling a bit threatened by it, because they've all come out and so ferociously defended the banner, which of course they were going to. But do they realise when they do this, like Bellator writing back to the tweet,
it's
and everything?
Terrible. I thought that, no, was, they, that
actually,
was awful.
They're actually
that.
Like pumping this event up bigger for Cage Warriors.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Like, when the answer, the problem is, right, everybody gets onto me after this thing breaks, and I was like, I've been involved in this too many times to even get involved. Mm. Just like this again, I'm not doing it. I'm sure it's going to happen again next week. That's part of the course.
I saw it escalating. I was like, nah.
Oh, do you know how many times I've been like, oh, you've instigated this, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
So I saw it kicking off, and then I was getting a few people from Bellator getting onto me. And I was like, lads, they were saying like, only four people went to the UFC this year. And I was like, that's why it's interesting. No, not everybody's going to go, but that's why it's interesting. They're all fighting for this one small thing.
Bellator signed half of Europe.
Yeah,
but, like go.
But they haven't been able to make a compelling fight because they aren't fighting for anything.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? This is the problem with the European scene. Even with the likes of Queeley, who we feel is like elite after that scope fight, who's he going to fight next? It doesn't feel like he's building towards anything.
Yeah, it was
just a bunch of fights, you know? That's the one thing that I guess that Bellator can't really compete with Cage Warriors on. And it's the fact that these guys are going to the UFC, and of course they're going to say money, money, money. That's great. But that doesn't put arses in seats at the end of the day. Yeah. Nobody's paying for a fight and going, do you know what, I'm going to go and see this because I'm so pumped about them all getting paid so well.
There you go.
Like, it's great for the fighters. Don't get me wrong. I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled for the fighters, everyone involved. But that isn't compelling from a sports point of view.
It's not. Not at all. You said it all there in one for me. I think, you know, the elusiveness is the lack. And maybe it's tougher to get signed by the UFC. No great disrespect to the guys that have been signed and picked up by Bellator here in Europe. But it's very different towards their American shows, a lot of them. And let's just be honest about it. You know, we've seen a lack of Irish fighters, as you said, being signed to the UFC. I think that makes it more intriguing because it is the biggest show in the world. And I just think that's the bottom line. You know, if you are a martial artist and you want to go to Bellator, I can totally understand that because the money point of view that is there. But if you want to go, if you want to fulfill your dreams, it is the UFC, mate. You know, what did we grow up watching?
No, UFC.
UFC.
But what I'm trying to say is, so Bellator did a great thing. You know, a lot of people talk about what they've done for Irish MMA, but it's like, it's one gym, really. You know, like I mean, you get obviously, you know, a few guys from Rhino. Outside of that, there's not a lot of, you know, outside of SBG, who are very affiliated with Bellator these days. It's tough to see it good for the whole nation. You know,
it's damaging. Yeah,
and then I don't know if it's damaging, but
well, it is to certain other smaller gyms who can't get guys pro fights.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, that's why Cage Warriors. Yeah. It's such a good thing. Like, yeah, we have guys from the Cork.
FAI,
Liam Beechner's guys, the Maguire brothers, you know, lots of different options. Rhino guys, you know,
FAI,
Team KF, of course. Yep. So it's really good to see that.
That's
so
what
I
need.
Feel like that's why it's so important that Cage Warriors.
Yeah, but it's
back,
it's more possibly of a level playing field for other gyms, as we just said. They're getting fighters on pro cards, and it's essential for the development of the sport in this country. And I think it's good to see Cage Warriors back in Somerset, but I'm still a little bit worried about this card on Saturday.
Are you afraid there will be a late spanner in
yes.
the works? Same here. And I said it to Graham in the interview as well. I'm like,
should look at the Dublin card.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't happen because
it'd be an awful shame.
Because there's going to be a lot of work to do then as well for everyone, including us, if there is a late kind of a thing. I think it's huge that they're back. I'm really excited about it. And if I have to say, I've seen a lot of guys who I expect to go on to greatness in Irish MMA. And sometimes I feel like the spotlight can take away from that. And that's why I feel like now this fight's become even bigger for Ian Garry. Because of this thing that happened, it went viral, obviously, with Sean, the statement that he made, Bellator being like Barnsley. But it does change the situation now. Because now we were all just talking about how this guy is the next guy, next big thing from the Republic of Ireland that's going to fight in the UFC, essentially. That was pie in the sky. That's where this guy could go. And now it's going to be all of these guys from Bellator want this guy to lose. You know, it's different pressure.
Yeah.
It's a lot of expectation. And that's where I feel like it's changed slightly what we're going to see on Saturday, you know?
From Ian himself.
For Ian.
For Ian, yeah, yeah. Not from Ian. I don't think he's impressed me an awful lot. It's the first time I've sat down with him and spoken with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he's great, but I'm just saying it's a different thing now. I mean, there's a different storyline now.
Yeah, there is a different storyline, but it's storyline that's going to put eyes on Ian Garry, and I think,
like, right now, he's a more talked-about fighter than Rhys McGee at the headline event.
He is, yeah. And it's good things for him, as long as he doesn't get sucked up in it emotionally.
I don't think he will. I've talked to him
yeah,
a bit
no,
since.
That, that's what, that's
I think
what
it's
I mean.
Daunting when it first happens, though. You know, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, it is. I think it always is. If there's any sort of commotion online or anything like that regarding yourself, but he's a guy that, you know, I was massively impressed by his maturity and what he was saying and when I spoke with him. He understands the game, he understands the media. He's one of these guys that will be able to brush that aside and fight night. It won't be an issue for him.
Yeah, and I think it's just huge for Rhys. I think everyone I spoke to at the media day, any media member, Graham Boylan himself in our interview, Ian Garry even, everyone thinks it's the next guy that's going from the south.
We've said it for God knows how long, Petey, and, you know, it is a massively important fight against a very experienced guy in Hakon Foss. But, you know, Rhys has everything there to get himself there, and he's another guy that's, I don't want to bring it up again, but, you know, he said he would never go down the Bellator route, and he stuck to his words and that, and he's stuck with the UFC dreams and aspirations and for Cage Warriors. So I'm massively looking forward to seeing Rhys in there.
Yeah, looking forward to Paul Lawrence as well, who's moved to KF. Devastating power that
guy
has.
Paul moved to KF?
Yeah,
I
yeah.
didn't realise that, okay. Yeah.
Decky McAleen, and a man who Andrew McGann's been singing his praises for God knows how long.
He needs a win.
He's had
badly,
two losses
man.
On the trot with Cage Warriors, so hopefully he'll have that big performance when he takes on 1-0 Jared Southwell.
Yeah.
also looking forward to seeing the McGuire brothers and Eric Nolan, of course, back in action as well. Moving on, we will have a look at KSW 51 very briefly, because I won't really be able to cover this fight because it's on the same time as Cage Warriors. It's just a bit of a cluster fluke. Marius Pudzianowski obviously against Erko Young, the main event. That's going to be very compelling for people in Eastern Europe. There's no doubt about it. Boris Mankowski versus Bakosevich in the co-main event. Also have Damian Stasiak against Anton Rakic at 135. That's going to be a brilliant fight. Yeah, it's going to be a big one. And going over to Croatia.
Yeah, interesting.
I just feel like you got to have Solic there. Like, I mean, that's what that's missing. And look, Alexander Ilic is going to be on the card. Big deal from around that area too in the Balkans. But you got to have Solic on this card. You got to have on the card, man. I'm totally sick.
I totally agree. Is there any reason, do you know?
He just fought too recently. All right, okay,
fair enough.
And took a short notice opponent as well, so... Fair enough. And also at the weekend we have UFC Moscow. Zabit Magomed Sharipov in the main event against Calvin Kattar. That's a serious main event,
isn't it?
Serious fight. I expect him to do it, Zabit, though, to be honest.
I do. But I've been very impressed with Kattar. I saw him at 2-2-3 in person. And, you know, really, really solid fighter. Technically good everywhere. But I think, you know, if we look at Zabit Namar Magomed, he's on a different level. He is on that world-class level, and let's be honest, I think within the next year, this is the real push for him to kick on in 2020 with a win here. And, you know, we're going to be seeing him, I think, by a title shot at the end of the year against Max Holloway or Volkanovski in the 45-pound division.
Definitely. If Greg Hardy beats Alexander Volkov in the co-main event, I'll eat my hat.
Okay, there you go. I'm actually going to make you eat your fucking hat if that happens.
He's not
going to beat him. Listen, this is going to end. We all know this is going to end. There's going to be an eye poke or something like that. It's going to end with something stupid again. That's literally it. How is this guy in this position he's in? I don't know. I think Volkanovski.
Said he's looking forward to challenging the real monster division. Mate, you're struggling with the lads that they're bringing off the bench to fight you. You're struggling.
Yeah, no, listen. This could be it for him. I think he might be reconsidering things maybe after this fight.
Come
Saturday
to the end
night.
Of the road.
Yeah.
Just let him have Gan before he goes home so we can see.
I think everyone wants to see that one against him. But listen, if you're a betting man, you're a silly man if you're putting money on him. Our good old friend, Mr. Greg Hardy, I don't think he's much of a chance.
I'm sick of this adventure. Let's just end it.
Yeah.
Danny Roberts is back against Imadeyev. On the main card too, so
listen, Danny's a great fighter to watch. He's
a great lad too.
He's a lovely fella, but he's had some very, very nasty knockouts. And listen, hopefully for him, he can go in and put there on a performance and sort of reverse maybe the thoughts and the memories that are on people's minds. It's a big fight for Danny.
Ed Herman. I love watching Ed Herman fight.
Always good.
Glad they could get him a replacement opponent. Obviously, hasn't fought since that win over Pat Cummins earlier this year, but Ibrahimov should be a good test for him. Moving down the card, a lot of guys I don't know. Really. Like, Gamza Taf against, don't know, Clydeson Abreu.
Yeah, don't know.
Ramazan Emiev, he's good. He's fighting Anthony Rocco Martin. That's a good fight. Jeez, a lot of these lads. I mean, like, we're wasting our time really talking about
it
this.
We spoke about this.
Oh, shit, Roman Kopylov finally making his debut. That's a big one. Against Carl Robertson, that's a brilliant fight.
It's not a deep card.
But that's a brilliant fight.
Yeah.
Kopylov versus Robertson, that's brilliant. Wow, I didn't know he was making his debut here. But he was obviously one of my prospects to watch in 2019, so really excited about that.
It's shallow.
Panny there in the curtain jerker against Jesse Clark as well, so... Yeah, it's a bit of a shy card. Davey Grant against Grigory Popov. Love a bit of Davey.
Yeah, Davey's great to watch. That's pretty much it.
That's all of it, isn't it?
It's not a great card. It really isn't. It's not as deep. And, you know, I think I think they should show the Russians a little bit more respect because it's a massive market for them there.
Yeah. But that's a huge card for them, though. All these Russian guys, all these M1 challenges.
That is, yeah, that's true.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. It's not.
I'll watch it on the train home from Cork.
There you go. It's one
of
those.
If there's Wi-Fi on the train, probably not.
You wouldn't be caught it if you missed it and had to watch it the next day. It's one of those ones, isn't it?
But you know, we'll be watching it live.
No. Yeah, of course we will. But I'm just saying for our listeners, like, I wouldn't be fucking tuning in on.
I'm pretty exhausted now, I have to say.
If you have a trip to the pub, maybe make it.
I'm looking forward to it.
We're just looking at this fucking rain here.
Sure, isn't it?
It is brutal.
Well, that's it. That's all we have, really, from an MMA point of view for this week.
MMA.
But what else? I just need...
England lost.
Oh, yeah. The rugby. I didn't watch a second of it.
Did you not?
No.
To be honest, it was awfully promoted. They've done something seriously wrong with their marketing team there. You could go all week last week and I don't think anyone, Sky didn't even hardly pick it up, talk about it, and that's very unlike them to not be bragging about the English being in a World Cup final. And it was very subdued, I felt. But United lost again after four games winning. Very disappointing performance against Bournemouth. Yeah, that's the thing. We're going to have to accept that. I said a few weeks ago, you know, you'll get your wins and you get your losses, but it's going to be a period of a lot of inconsistency, Peter.
A period of regrowth. A
period of regrowth, yeah. For quite some time, while Liverpool sit top of the table.
I'm raging that you're not going to be in
yeah,
Cork
I can't
this
make
weekend.
It down this weekend, unfortunately.
I'm only going on the day.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed I'm not going, but, you know, just can't get down or can't make it. I have prior commitments, so, yeah, I'll obviously be watching. I'm very much looking forward to the co-main and main event and that to see if Mr. McKee can have a successful £170 debut. I think it's a big moment for him.
I think that is, like, I mean, if there was any complaints in terms of that card, it would be that Joe McColgan didn't get a fight. You need to get him on the card.
Maybe we'll have a couple of additions this week. I don't know that they haven't announced yet, but it doesn't
and
seem...
Why not Chris Fields v. Bukaukas?
We should have done that, yeah.
That would have been fucking great.
Sure, Chris is gagging to get back in there by all accounts from his Twitter. But yeah,
well,
listen.
I know he said it to us once. He definitely said it to us once that he was interested in that, you know. So
he's coming for a fight, I think, by all accounts. But yeah, I think Reese is for me. It's a big test. 170, a veteran like Hakon Foss.
Boylan says he's straight into the title conversation.
Well, that's
win.
It. I think it really is one of those fights where you know, this one could open the door in 2020 for a path for Reese McKee to the UFC, and that's not a word of a lie. You know, 1-2 fights maybe after this, it'll dictate a lot from where Reese's career trajectory is going to end up, and I think he's all the tools to do it. And I think that touch of death, as we call it, will transfer over. You know, he's actually been saying that to us as well. It's a funny one. He goes, everyone's saying that now, the touch of death, since we've been saying it. And I think it very much is, and I expect him to land that in Hakon Foss on Saturday night.
We're the agenda setters for the European sport.
It's just a shame that Cork...
Of course people are taking our lines, you know.
Yeah, it's a shame that Cork is getting this limelight. Cork's a horrible place.
Cork is deadly, man.
No, it's not.
Well, you've never gone to the north side of Dublin, so I mean, you don't fuck. Here, meet me 20 minutes from my house.
Well, why would you want to go anywhere in this?
He sends me a message at 9:45. We're meeting at 9:15. He's only getting the bus. I've been on the go for 2 hours.
Well, you were late 5 minutes. I was on time.
Well, you changed the time.
Yeah.
Called an audible on it.
Nice.
Yeah. Don't do that.
15 minutes. Shut up. You're always late anyway.
Listen, better late than
I
pregnant.
I would have been standing there for fucking 20 minutes anyway, so what's the point?
Listen.
I'm going to do that from now on. I'm going to say, like, Petey, I'll meet you at 10 o'clock, so you'll come at 9:15, thinking 15 minutes
ahead
in my head.
Yeah, well, you know, whenever I can walk 70 miles, you know, it depends on how I'm walking that morning.
Could have got the bus.
Jesus Christ.
I wouldn't be walking anywhere in this weather. Look at that fucking shit.
Right, well, look, I'm going to leave us to it.
I don't
want to
go,
loads.
Yeah. I don't want
to
go, yeah.
I'll leave you in this cafe
by
yourself.
Can I just talk for the rest of the...
Yeah, of course you can.
For the next half an hour.
Right, I've got to go.
Listen, yeah, good one. Great week of fights. And yeah, pleasure as always.
I don't know if Noel's going to be with us next week, because I'm going to just have to record that, because I'm not going to have time to go.
In Cork?
Yeah.
Look, showing me on air. This is just disgraceful.
I just don't have enough fucking time in the day, and I don't have a car, and I don't have a lot of things that I need to have.
This is disgraceful.
Because I'm the engine room of this podcast, we know that.
Fuck you, yeah, you're in your bollocks.
Come on, I'll talk to you later. All the best.